Tonight is Wednesday night, April 9th, or 10th day of the month of Nisan. This is the women's Mishnah share, but we're doing something on the Haggadah, week before Pesach. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to devote tonight's share to various thoughts on the Haggadah. And if one looks at the Rambam, at the end of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, the Rambam provides a text for the Haggadah for us. And in introducing the phrase Halach Ma'anya, he states that one should publicly make the following statement before you begin reading. Bibihilu yatsanu mimitzrayim. Bibihilu. Bet, bet, hey, yud, lamed, vav. Which is the Aramaic translation of the word bechipazon. Bechipazon yatsanu mimitzrayim. So apparently, according to the Rambam's version, before you even start Halach Ma'anya, focusing on Matzah, you have to make some type of a statement about the element of chipazon that took place in the context of the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this element of chipazon should be elaborated upon, and it plays a very significant role in two aspects of the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim. On the one hand, the matzah itself that was consumed by the Jew was baked bechipazon, was baked quickly. And that one of the reasons why the Egyptians made us eat matzah is because if you wanted to make sure that you get maximum productivity out of the slave, you try not to waste too much time with meals. And since it is much easier to prepare matzah, takes far less time. So the idea of a chipazon was something introduced by the Egyptians already to maximize the work effort by minimizing the amount of time that one would have to spend preparing meals. In his Haggadah of the Avudraham, he quotes a person by the name of Rab Yosef Ho'ezovi, who says that he was a prisoner in India, and the food that was given to him as a staple every single day of the year of his life while he was in prison was matzah. And he asked his captors, "Why did you feed me matzah? Why do you feed me matzah?" And they answered, number one, because primarily it doesn't take a long time to make. Number two, somehow it sits within your stomach for a very long time, and you don't need a lot of it to satiate you. And therefore, it reduced food expenses for us, the captor, it reduced the expense. So this idea of matzah as a staple for slaves is something that was carried on well above and beyond in Mitzrayim itself. And the fact that the matzah plays a dual role. One, it is a symbol of the Shibud in Mitzrayim. And at the same time, it's a symbol of the Exodus, is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu plays with a touch of irony. If you are going to go ahead and enslave us to make sure that what? That we have maximum work detail. Maximum work detail. And therefore, I'm going to make sure that even the bread which you consume doesn't take a very long time to leave. Am Yisrael are going to be leaving with that same chipazon experience on the way out. So the fact that God tells us, Ki gorshu mi Mitzrayim. The phrase is always not just that we're leaving. Ki biyad chazaka yigorshein me'artzo. The fact that we left in great haste is not is something to balance out that they wanted to, they made sure that we were working 99% of the time. The way they made sure that you work, the maximum work of, is by creating this haste for the meal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, now it's time to leave. I'm going to exhibit the same idea of haste on the way out. So there is a parallel between the chipazon with which the matzah is baked and a parallel to the chipazon which Am Yisrael eat on the way out of Mitzrayim as well. But there are one or two ideas that I want to elaborate on simply based on a comparison of the text and the Haggadah itself. If you have the Haggadah, it always helps. If you open up Ram Gamliel's statement, later on in the Haggadah, right after Dayenu, so you have the famous Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer, Kol Shaloama Shloish Dvarim Pesach Loyatzi Dechavasa. Now, if you look at Batzah, we're going to focus this second statement, Matzah Zu She'anu Ochlin Al Shulma. So if you look at the pasuk that is quoted, why does it say that we eat matzah? Al Shelo Hispik Bitzeikam Lahachmitz. When? Ad Shenigla Aleihem Melech Malchei Melech Kadosh Baruch Hu Gula Miyad, Shene'emar, Vayofu es habotzik asher hotziu mi Mitzrayim ugot matzot ki lo chametz ki gorshu mi Mitzrayim v'lo yochlu mismameya. You generate the impression that before God legislates and says, you know what? You're being driven out of Mitzrayim and I'm telling you, I want you to eat matzah. Why do I want you to eat matzah? Because you did not have enough time to bake matzos when? When you were driven out of Mitzrayim. That's what it says in the text. I'm going to read to you now chapter 12 of Sefer Shmot. Does anybody know what pasuk this is quoted? What pasuk is that quoted? Chapter 12, what verse? Chapter 12, what verse is that pasuk? It's got to say it. Yeah. What verse is it? What number? What verse is it? Lamed, chapter 39 in chapter 12. Verse 39 in chapter 12. What does it say? God drove you out of Mitzrayim and you ate matzos. Why? Because the Egyptians did not allow you the time to bake the bread. That's what it says in the Haggadah. I'm now going to read for you the psukim at the beginning of chapter 12. Here's what it says. It's the second day of the month of Nisan, 12 days before the exodus of Mitzrayim. And God tells Am Yisrael, on the 10th day of the month, this is what he tells them on the second day of the month, when it arrives the 10th, I want you to what? Take an animal and set it aside for what? For the Korban Pesach. Very nice. And on the 14th, what are you supposed to do? Slaughter that animal. And what are you supposed to do? On the night of the 15th, what are you supposed to do? Eat that Korban Pesach. Together with what? Matzah and Maror. Matzah and Maror. This is while we are the second day of the month of Nisan.
So then they have time to eat.
So hold on. That's exactly the question that I'm going to lead to. In the Haggadah, it generates the impression that the reason why we're eating matzah is because there was no time to bake matzos on the way out. That's what it says. That's what it really does. What do you mean? God said to eat matzah before you were even left, before I took you out of Israel. It says that you're supposed to eat the Korban Pesach. It says it in verse 7. Check it out. Karim Yudbet, Pasuk says, Ya'achlu et ha-basar balay la'azeh, kim sliyesh, U matzot al merorim yachlu. Five psukim later, it says, Ach bayom harishon tashbitu sa'or mivatecha. What does that mean? Tashbitu sa'or mivatecha. What does that mean? To remove the chametz from your house. When is God telling this? On the second day of the month, He is already telling them, no chametz, only matzah. So the question is an obvious one. If you simply read the text itself, it's quite evident that God had already addressed Am Yisrael to Moshe, who will communicate that to Am Yisrael, that they're supposed to eat matzah on the night of the 15th, and that there is not permitted to be a morsel of chametz in your possession throughout Ach Bayom Arishim Tashbitu Sarmi Batecha. Very nice. So what do you mean? So why does Rabbi Gamliel now come and say, oh, you know why we eat matzah? Matzah zusha lo'otan al-shulma? Because when we were driven out of the shrine, we didn't have time to bake bread. And if we, even if you had 9 hours to bake bread, we'd still be eating matzah. Why? God said, on the night of delivery, you're supposed to eat matzah. So what in the world is happening in this particular parish? What is Rabbi Gamliel saying when the text seems to contradict everything that he says? So I share with you a machloket recorded in Tosefta in the Braita, a machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi Haglili as to whether or not our Pesach, the way we observe Pesach, was the way Am Yisrael observed Pesach while they were in Mitzrayim. The name of that first Pesach is called Pesach Mitzrayim. That's that first Pesach is called Pesach Mitzrayim. All other Pesachim from year number 2 until this very day is called, in the terms of the Mishnah, Pesach Dorot. The Pesach that is observed for all future generations. So now there is a debate between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim. How many days did the Jews observe Pesach that first year? That first year, as they were getting out of Mitzrayim. Was Pesach a one-day holiday the first year? Or was Pesach a seven-day holiday when they left Mitzrayim that year? Rabbi Yossi Haglili says Pesach was a one-day holiday that first year. Only one day. According to some interpretations, not even one day. One night holiday. Just the night of, just the night that the big drama of when they were getting out. That's it. The Chachamim are of the opinion that the holiday of Pesach was observed for 7 complete days, even that first year when they left Mitzrayim. Even that first year when they left Mitzrayim. So now, let's analyze the Psukim according to... So now let's see what's happening in the Psukim. God tells the Jew on the second day of the month of Nisan that you're going to get out of Mitzrayim and that you should eat matzah. When is that mitzvah recorded for, to eat matzah? When is that? That's that first night. That first night. And let's assume that the rest of the paragraph, the rest of the unit, has nothing to do with the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim that night. All of the other psukim, which tell us that that you should observe Pesach for 7 days and get rid of your chametz all 7 days, has nothing to do with the fact that the Jew is leaving Mitzrayim. So what's happening here is as follows. So let's see what's happening right here. The Yom of Pesach is observed, according to Rabbi Yossi, only one night. Only one night. That's it. That's it. Beyond that, there's no Pesach. So the next day, as we are about to leave Mitzrayim, could the Jew have consumed chametz or not? Could he consume chametz? Of course he has. Could have consumed. No prohibition. Because as Rabbi Yossi says, all of the 7 days and all of the attendant prohibitions of getting rid of chametz from our homes and has nothing to do with Pesach Mitzrayim. Only Pesach Dorot. Only Pesach Dorot. So in theory, I could have eaten, I could have baked chametz as I am prepared. Well, we're standing there in Mitzrayim. We did not leave at night. We left during the day. At night, we did not leave. We know that for a fact. So now, could you and me, do we have the opportunity to bake chametz and to eat chametz? 100% we did. So what is the only reason why that very first year I did not eat chametz for my travel in the desert? Why did I eat matzah when I traveled in the desert? Why? Why? Why did I have time? Why? Ki garshu mi Mitzrayim. So now Ram Gabriel is explaining what's happening in light of how the Torah presents the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Again, listen carefully. The prohibition against eating chametz and the mitzvah to eat matzah was not in effect technically when the Jew left Mitzrayim. It was not. So the question which we asked, why is it suddenly a big shock that we're eating matzah? After all, God told us to eat matzah before we even left Mitzrayim. The answer is, when He told us to eat matzah, when did He tell us to eat matzah? Only that first night. Because Pesach was not to be observed for 7 days that first year. Only that first night, to eat the Korban Pesach, eat matzah. Now it's a regular weekday. Regular weekday beyond that. So if it's a regular weekday, as the Jew is now contemplating his trip from Mitzrayim into the desert, what should he have done at that particular time? He should have baked matzah. Why? He should have baked chametz. No reason not to eat chametz. Because the holiday doesn't exist for 7 days.
What does he do with Pesach?
So which pasuk? That's all. That's all for whom? For whom? Future generations. It has nothing to do with this Pesach. All of chapter 12, which tells us how to observe Pesach, is only for the future generations. But on that very first Pesach, none of that applied. That's just it. What is the only reason why I eat matzah having left Mitzrayim? That's exactly what Rav Gamliel is now saying. Why am I eating matzah now, today? Because I didn't have the luxury, not because God had prohibited it. The issue was, I raised the question that the text seems to disagree with the answer offered by Rav Gamliel. Answer. Rav Gamliel is operating on the assumption that there is a distinction between what's called Pesach Mitzrayim versus other Pesachim. Pesach Mitzrayim, one day, just the first night. All other Pesachim, 7 days. So on that very first year in which we're leaving Mitzrayim, there are no prohibitions against having chametz in your house on day number one. None whatsoever. There is no mitzvah to eat matzah other than at the Seder night, other than at the time of the Korban Pesach, and that's it. Well, now that's over. The 15th day arrives, midday, God's taking that as a Mitzrayim. Why don't I sit there and bake bread? Answer. Because the prohibition of chametz doesn't exist. The mitzvah of matzah doesn't exist yet. It's only for future generations. So I have the luxury right now of eating chametz. What is the only reason why I did not eat chametz? Because Paro said, I don't want you to wait 5 more seconds to get out of my country. And hence, instead of baking, I'm going to tell you the Rashbam's cute word. Instead of baking bread under the luxury of your oven in Mitzrayim, how was the dough baked when you traveled? With what? How was the dough baked? With what medium?
The
sun. Correct. That's exactly what Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel says. That the bread of the Mitzrayim was baked. I'll give you the exact quote because you don't believe me. I'll give you the crack. Here's the quote. U'mit'afei lehom mechumsha v'shimsha. The heat of the sun. That's what they... And that's why, what's the name of the matzah in this text? Udot matzah. Udot matzah. Says the Rashbah. Why do I call matzah udot matzah? Based on the fact that it was not baked in the normal oven. It was heated only by exposure to the sun. So this idea that one, that the reason why I'm eating matzah when I leave is because ki gorshumi, it's like Paro did not allow me to remain in, not because there was any prohibition against eating bread. I could have eaten bread. Had Paro allowed me to stay 5 more minutes or 5 more hours, I would have eaten regular bread on Pesach. But because he drove me out, I did not have the time to do so. So this element of leaving Bechi Pazon is the demonstrative act of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges the entire drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Hence, what does the Rambam say you're supposed to say at the beginning of the Seder? What are you supposed to say? What is it? Bebehilu Yatzanu Mitzrayim. If you want to know what's going to happen tonight, I want you to keep one thought in mind. Bihilu, bechipazon. And that chipazon should be understood in two ways. One, holach ma'anya diacholo abason of Arad Mitzrayim. This is the bread which we eat in Mitzrayim because it baked very quickly. And the slave taskmaster said, I'm not wasting a lot of time on meals. So in one respect it was halach ma'anya, and then as well it also serves as the symbol for the geula itself. Due to the fact that the only reason why I consume matzah as a symbol of freedom is on account of the fact that Paro pushed us out of Mitzrayim, ki garshu bi Mitzrayim. Not because there is a prohibition against consumption of the text, of the chametz. And what leads us this is because if you read the psukim, you come away with the impression that the institution of matzah and the prohibition of chametz was legislated by God way before we left Mitzrayim. In which case, Rabbi Gamliel makes no sense whatsoever. But if I present it in the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who says that the first Pesach was not observed 7 days, and all the attendant details that we know of did not exist that very first Pesach, we now can appreciate what Rav Gamliel says by his addition of why am I matzazushan ochlan al shulma ashalo hispik bitseikom lahatmitz. Why? Ki garshu mi Mitzrayim. I have been driven out of Mitzrayim. That's the only reason why I eat matzah. Yes.
The other possibility is back when you started in the beginning was that they had the mentality of a slave, and therefore they decided that it would be more practical to carry matzah for this long trip that they didn't worry about how long it was going to be. If it fills your stomach, all things you said in the beginning, it'd be less of it to satisfy you, so maybe that was
a function. That's also a possibility. But then you don't have to emphasize the gorging me, it's
right.
Correct. Correct? Yeah.
I have a chronological question.
Yeah.
In the beginning of this son, when Hashem said you have to prepare and all this, we didn't know what Paro was really exactly going to tell us to go.
That is correct.
So it still was going to be a rush, needless that he just said go right away. Like, we didn't know the time frame.
We had no idea time frame when we were going to get out of this
run. Exactly. So when you prepare exactly when you don't know when it was going to happen.
Okay, but no, they knew that they were getting out of this
run. Right, but they didn't know when.
They know exactly when.
They didn't know when he was going to do the
business. No, they did not know. They did not know.
So that was part of it.
No, they didn't know what? They didn't know when he was going to...
Well, when he was going to finish all the plagues and Paro was going to say...
No, that, all the plagues were done.
So it wasn't
he knew
right
that.
After...
They knew that.
Yeah.
They were not, he
right
said, no more nega. No more
old
nega echad avi. I will bring one more plague, and that's attacked by Makat Bechor. He was told. This is it. What? Yeah, that's exactly it.
Go, but we didn't leave right that minute.
We did deliberately did not go when he. Yeah, he said go at night when Makas Bechoris took place. That's when Paro said go.
Right.
We did not leave until broad daylight the next day, because God said, "I don't want anybody going out in the middle of the night. I want to go out in broad daylight, because then people will say, we snuck out." Exactly. So the permission to leave was already granted. The permission to leave was granted at night.
The Jews didn't know what was going to happen.
No, they knew exactly when it was going to happen.
Then we knew when we were going to leave.
No, they didn't. They knew that they would be granted permission to leave, but God did not tell them, "I want you to pick yourself up again. I don't want you to leave." He didn't tell them when.
Okay.
The next day, he tells them in the middle of the day, "Pack your bags, we'll leave." Yes, the Rashbam says that this bread is not called matzah, but ugot matzot, because it was baked in the sun and not necessarily by the oven. In order to be called lechem, it has to be baked in an oven. Baked by the sun, it's called ugot matzot. So says the Rashbam. He doesn't explain why it is. Okay. He just explains the difference. Why is it not called regular lechem? Why is it called ugot matzah? Now, there is a major question which many ask and many comment on, and I want to elaborate on this. There is a well-known notion that the Jew was in Mitzrayim. Let me put it this way. There are arba lishonot of geula. Four cups of yayin can an arba lishonot of geula. Do arba lishonot of geula actually represent four different redemptions? Of course not. It's only one redemption. But apparently there are stages to the redemption. Stages to the redemption. And the stages to redemption are to counter the enslavement itself. And let me explain what I'm referring to. If any of your kids were asked, or their teachers said, why did Shibud Mitzrayim take place? Take place after 210 years, and not when it was originally scheduled for how many years? 400. It says Ve'inu Olso Arba Me'oshan. Why didn't we get out after 210 years? Why? What's the standard answer? What? Now, what's the standard answer? Why? What's the standard answer? That it really should have been. But what happened? But so the famous words are that they were in the 49th level of Tumah, whatever that means, Memtet Shari Tumah. Had they entered the 50th level, they would never be able to get out. Every kid knows that. 50, they couldn't have gotten out. So God had to take them out right there and then. So the Beis Halevi explains, what exactly does this idea mean? This idea means, and I'm going to show you a parallel to it in our own day and age. You're a parent, I'm a parent. So we give over certain qualities to our children. But if the child has no opportunity of repeating, practicing those qualities, those characteristics, eventually, what's going to happen to those particular qualities, characteristics that you want to foster within your children? What's going to happen to it? It's eventually going to disappear. Says the Beis Halevi, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov had certain qualities in terms of their connection to God that they wanted to implant within their children. As soon as they begin living in Mitzrayim, and they are no longer capable, the environment is no longer conducive to what? To emulating, to repeating, to living a lifestyle in harmony with the values of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. So generation number one still remembers it. Okay, still remembers it. Generation number two is not as committed to those ideals anymore. Generation number 10 never heard of those ideals anymore. If you would want somebody, just think about it today. Think about it today. You have a great grandfather who lived a perfectly committed life in Europe. And then his children, then he comes to America, and one generation is okay, the next generation. And now they are so far assimilated that you'd never recognize that this particular family had any upbringing as a committed family. If you're looking to save somebody, what do you have to make sure that you, when does the interceding come about? When should you, if you really want to save and try to restore that connection to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there has to be a time when there is at least some spark left. Something that at least remind them of what Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's lifestyle were all about. So, when we say 49 levels of Tum'ah, says the Beis HaLevi, don't look at it as Tum'ah, because it has a very negative very negative association. Just look at it very simply. That God, in his estimation and understanding, how the assimilation process was taking place in Mitzrayim, came to the recognition that if I wait one more generation, one more year, there will be such a severance of everything that Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov stood for, that there would be no purpose whatsoever to take them out and say, oh, you're going to be my people, a Jewish people, a moral people, a decent, and ethical. I don't know what you're talking about. So the reason why it had to take place at that particular moment was because if it did not happen, it would have been virtually impossible to have any hope and aspiration that it would ever take place again. Because you would have been so far removed from the original model that it would have been impossible to what? So therefore, apparently at year number 210, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had estimated at that particular time, and as a result, he couldn't even wait one additional year. But what happens at that particular time? What was necessary for them to reawake them at that particular time? What was necessary to reawake them? A dramatic event, not just an ordinary event. A dramatic event known as Yitziat Mitzrayim. And the Rav, in one of his major addresses, felt that the exact same thing happened to us after the Shoah. So many people had lost their faith in a belief in God after what happened during the Shoah, that the only way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have restored Am Yisrael's faith in him was to engage in something incredibly dramatic. And that, of course, was 3 years later with the United Israel. And he said, obviously, it's not an exact parallel, but there are parallels. That if you are sunk to an abyss, such a level of being so distant, where there has been an attempt to eradicate our connection to Yahadut, by some force, whether it was Egyptian or at that time the Germans, and if you wait any longer, what might happen? You run the risk that it would be impossible to engage in any type of recovery. So at the year 210, at that particular time, what happens is, in order to save Am Yisrael, to enable them to engage in some type of connection, therefore the drama has to take place at that particular time. Yes?
The only thing is, it's almost rewarding the bad behavior, because here we are, we pray every day for Mashiach, and we're trying to be better to bring in. It's an excellent point.
But Tova mentioned something that the text itself says, which we have incorporated into our davening every single day. If you look at Shmot, at the text itself, the only change that takes place in year number 210 that did not take place in 209 is that the Jew prayed to God. Read the pasuk. It says as follows: Vayehi bayamim harabim lahem. Vayeanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avodah. Vayizaku. Batal shabbatam el Elohim. So, what happened in 210 that did not happen in 140 or 90 or 80 or 190 was the fact that at that particular moment, Am Yisrael recognized there is no one else to turn to other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So when the Jew comes to the recognition that there is no one else to turn to, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides, you know what? Now's the time for me to make my move. This idea of a connection between redemption as a result of one's awareness through prayer is the basis of our entire davening. Our entire davening is predicated upon the principle smichut ge'ula l'tfilah. Smichut ge'ula l'tfilah. And here is the halachic application of this rule. You walk into shul Shabbos morning, and why do you come to shul, ladies and gentlemen? For what purpose? What's the purpose? We know that. What takes place in shul that you cannot have when you daven in your living room? Tfilah b'tzibur. The fact that you daven together with a minyan. So here is the case. I walk into shul, and they're up to Tzur Yisrael, Guma Be'etras Yisrael. And I'm ready. I walk in. Should I start Shmon Esrei right on the spot? So that I will have tefillah b'tzibur. I will daven together with the minyan. That's what tefillah b'tzibur means. Not to daven shul. Tefillah b'tzibur means to daven Shmona Esrei together with the minyan. Are you supposed to do that, ladies, or you're not? What's the answer? The answer is you're not. You're not. You can skip all of brachot. You can skip all of psukei d'zimra. But Birchot Shema you have to say before Shmon Esrei. You must say Birchot Shema. Even if it will cost you Tefillah B'Tzibur. It will. Why? Because you can't just walk into HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, I'm ready to daven, I expect you to listen to me. Can't. What we have to do is emulate the process that took place in this rite. Come to the recognition that there is no one else to turn to. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when you make that declaration, that's when I'm ready to listen. But if you're an arrogant SOB, and you think that what? I can take care of all life's problems myself. I'm a genius. I'm a great doctor. I don't need you. I'm a great businessman. I don't need you. Then God says, you have no right to stand before me. So before a person can engage in tefillah, he has to replicate the process that took place in Mitzrayim. What did they do in Mitzrayim? They came to the recognition that there is no one else to turn to. That leads to Geulah. We do it in the reverse. First, we recite Geulah. We recite the same Mitzrayim De'altanu and Baruch Ato Hashem Ba'al Yisrael, recognizing that I'm going to come to the same conclusion that I cannot solve my problem, just like the Jew in Mitzrayim could not solve his and her problem. Then I stand Shmon Esrei. So, what happened in Mitzrayim has now become the driving force behind the entire process called communal prayer. The Jew was not delivered from Mitzrayim until he prayed. The moment he prayed, the next pasuk after it says "Vayizak v'tal shavasam," the very next pasuk, "Vayizkor Elohim et Brito et Abraham et Yitzchak et Yaakov." Next pasuk is "Umoshe hayaro et zon." Suddenly Moshe is called by God to serve as the Redeemer of Bnei Yisrael. Why? Because if you come to that recognition that there's no one else to turn to, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts on our behalf. And we have replicated that in the halacha called Smichut Geula L'Tfilah by not allowing a person to pray until we relive that Geula experience that Am Yisrael lived at that time. Hence, if you come into shul and you're up to shul's up to Shmon Esrei, and you have not yet said Berachot Shema, you cannot die. And we are willing to forego Tfilat Hatzibur, Tfilat Hatzibur, in order to be Somech Geula L'Tfila. And that emerges based on the fact that the Geula took place specifically at that particular time. Yeah. Yeah. We don't know, but the first time that the Torah tells us that they even prayed was that time. Vayehi bayamim harabim haheim vayeyanchu b'nei soman avodah vayizaku vatal shavatam el Elohim. That's the first time.
That's right.
That's
when there was a response.
No, it says that's the first time they prayed. Vatal shavatam el Elohim. First time. Then that had nothing to do with that. Correct. It's 100%. I grant you that. Yeah. There is a Kabbalistic idea which has come to expression in many commentaries of the Haggadah about the significance of the number 4, Pesach at night. And it's not just the 4 questions. Not just Arba Kosot. There are 4 psukim which are recited from Parshat Arami Oved Oved. We are called upon in the Haggadah, if you remember, to read the Parshat Arami Oved Oved. Remember that? Arami Oved Oved, Vayik Tevayish Yonder. Well, there are 4 psukim that are darshan from the pasuk in Dvarim chapter 26. Exactly 4 psukim. And the Kabbalists believe that the number 4, everything at the Seder, 4, is as a result of that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Havayu, Yud Kei Vav Kei, has 4 letters. So say the Kabbalists. That the number 4 somehow is to be associated with the Shem Havayah, name of God. Think about how many Anis there are. Write it down, sign. What's the drash? Ani, v'lo ma. Ani, v'lo sar. Ani, v'lo shaliyah. Ani, who? V'lo achet. 4 times Ani and not anybody else. And if you think, go back, you will see that the number 4 is prominently displayed many times throughout the Seder. somehow to, according to the Kabbalists, to somehow always keep in mind, always for us to keep in mind, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Everybody knows that the name HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yud Kei Vav Kei represents Midat HaChesed versus Elohim, which is Midat HaDin, which is represent Midat HaDin. And therefore, if you'll scan many of the commentaries on the Haggadah, they will make reference to this, that the entire Arba Kosos and the four, I mean, constantly four, is to remind us that one, every aspect of the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim was initiated directly by God, no intermediary whatsoever, as is emphasized with the Ani. This is a purely God-driven event. And number two, it takes place not based on criteria of Midat HaDin, but only based on Midat HaChesed. Meaning that if God were to judge an individual based on Midat HaDin, he would have come to a decision that we don't deserve to be redeemed. So say the Kabbalists. And the question which many of the Parshanim ask on the Kabbalist idea, how could anybody make such a statement if God had already promised and dictated to Abraham that you're going to be a slave, you're going to be a stranger in another land, and what's going to happen? You're going to be redeemed. Well, if God promised that they're going to be slaves in Mitzrayim, then be redeemed, then it's no longer an act of chesed on his part. He has to do it because he made a promise unto Abraham. So it's not midat ha-chesed, it's actually midat ha-din. That's a question which many ask. If you want to assume that the Arba is keneged the midah of the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which is the symbol of God acting based on his attribute of Midas HaChesed, the assumption is that the entire drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim takes place only because of God's mercy and chesed, not based on something which he had to do al-pidin. The question which people ask is, how can anybody make such a statement? For after all, God made a promise that the Jew is going to be in a stranger in a land that doesn't belong to them, and he will redeem this particular generation. And the answer which is given by several is the following. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised to Abraham that they're going to be strangers in a land that doesn't belong to them, and then they're going to be redeemed, did not necessarily have to take place with this generation. In fact, Yaakov believed that the promise had already been fulfilled much earlier. Much earlier. And this, I take the liberty of repeating something from last year. How many people remember what I'm about to say? Oh, excellent. I know, I didn't have to. Okay. This was one of the world's most brilliant interpretations. One of the best I ever heard of. It's the beginning of chapter 37 of Sefer Bereshit. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Kanaan. Chapter 37, verse 1. Says Rashi, Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. Yaakov wanted to leshev b'shalva. Translated by most people, he wanted to move to Boker. Leshev b'shalva, wanted to retire. What exactly does it mean, leshev b'shalva? What does that mean? Question number two. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Kanaan. It's the only time in the Torah text where there is a description of what Eretz Kanaan is. What is Eretz Canaan? Eretz Megurei Aviv. Question number two is, why is it necessary here to describe that Yaakov is living in Eretz Canaan and describe Eretz Canaan as what? As Eretz Megurei Aviv. Question number three. Chapter 36, verse 31. In the middle, this is chapter 37, which I'm focusing on. Now you look at 36, verse 31, and I quote, Ve'ele ha-melachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei melach melech b'Yisrael. Ve'ele ha-melachim. Here are the list of the Edomite kings. These are listed. Esau's eight kings. Ve'ele ha-melachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom. Edom is Esau. Lifnei melach melech b'Yisrael. When was the first Jewish king? Who was the first Jewish king? Shaul. How many years is it from Bereshit chapter 36 until Shaul appears on the scene? How many years is it? 700. We have 210 years of living in Mitzrayim. We have 40 years of traveling in the desert. We have all of the period of Yehoshua. We have the entire period of the Shoftim. Then Shmuel arrives and Shaul arrives. So now in Sefer Bereishit, I have to tell you who the eight Edomite kings are before I appoint the king of Israel. Okay, list the eight Edomite kings in Sefer Shmuel when Shaul's about to be appointed as king. Why do I record here in the book of Genesis 36 the Melachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei melach melech b'Yisrael? Said the Rav, I'll tell you why. Because Yaakov believed that the promise made to Avraham that you will be a stranger in a land that does not belong to you, you will be enslaved, and you will leave with great wealth has already taken place. Where did it take place? When Yaakov was at Lavan. When Yaakov was at Lavan, he was in a land that did not belong to him. So it's Yadoa Teda, Ki Ger Yiyeh Zaracha Be'eretz Lolan. It doesn't say, place Egypt. It says Be'eretz Lolahem. Well, Haran, where Lavan is, Aram Narayim, is Eretz Lolahem. Va'avadu, and I'm going to work. It says Aram El Shana, true. But the Jews didn't work for Aram El Shana and Israel either. So he worked. He worked for Lavan. And then, what does the Torah say? Va'acharechein, yetzu b'rechush gadol. Toward the swine, this enormous wealth which Yaakov had accrued in Lavan's house. Through that little trick that he played with the spider things, who knows what he did. But he did something and had a lot of wealth. Good. So if the promise to Abraham has already been fulfilled, what's the next stage in my life? Return to Israel, set up, the land will be mine and my children's for the rest of my life. Ah. Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Bishalva. Number one, Yaakov says, I now what? I'm coming back to Mitzrayim, to Eretz Yisrael. I will be here the rest of my life. Because God's promise to my grandfather, Abe, is now being fulfilled. Therefore, the Torah characterizes it as Eretz Megurei Aviv. What was the unique characteristic of Yitzchak to the land as opposed to Abraham and Yaakov? He never left. So now is Yaakov's returning to Eretz Canaan. Vayeshev Yaakov to Eretz Canaan. How does Yaakov appear and think he's going to be living in Eretz Canaan? Just the way his father lived. Like Eretz Megurei Aviv. Never to leave. Now, if he is about to enter into Israel and about to establish what? He's going to live here permanently. He has to establish a kingdom. Who does he plan on appointing as king? Yosef, of course. That's why the asalo kitones pasim. That's why he makes Yosef the kitones pasim. And why is Yosef dreaming about people bowing down to him? Because his father told him, you're going to be the king of Israel. That's why he dreams. And in fact, when the brothers are a little annoyed that what? That he's espousing ideas of power, what does the Torah say? Vayikanu bo'echav. The brothers were jealous. But ve'aviv shamar et avavav. He knew it was very true. He knew it's true. Why did he know it's true? Because he put him up to it. Because he is supposed to be the first king of Israel. Therefore, in chapter 36, the Torah correctly states, Ve'ema ha-melachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei melach melech b'Yisrael. Here I'll list off the 8 Edomite kings before the appointment of the first king of Israel. Who's the first king of Israel? Yosef. Now, listen very carefully. You can check this. The only interruption in the narrative in Sefer Bereishit from chapter 37 until the end of the book, which is chapter 50, is chapter 38. The only interruption in the narrative. Anybody know who the topic is of chapter 38? Who is the topic? It talks about Yehuda. Yehuda and his daughter-in-laws and so on and so forth. That's the only interruption. Only interruption in the entire narrative. So the Rebbe said, we're going to the theater. This is what he said, we're going to the theater. Okay? You are the audience. Here I am on stage. There is somebody behind me on stage that I, the actor, don't see it. Only you, the audience, see it. So who's that little actor in the back there? Yehuda. He's a little actor in the back. It's God's way of saying, Yaakov, you don't know what you're talking about. You think it's going to be Yosef. But I'm putting a little flash, a little interruption in the narrative. I'm going to tell you a little story about Yehuda. And who does ultimately Yehuda give birth to? Peretz and Zorah. And who does Peretz become? As we read at the end of Megillat Rus. Peretz, this is a minute. Peretz holded it Yishai, and Yishai holded it David. So Yaakov has this misguided idea that the fulfillment of the drama of to grandfather of being in a land which doesn't belong to you, and being redeemed and coming out wealthy and having the promise fulfilled, he thought it took place with him already. But it didn't. What had happened? Did Yaakov get to spend the rest of his life in Mitzrayim? Did he able to retire? No. He's going back down to Mitzrayim. Therefore, the next pasuk is Eile Toldot Yaakov Yosef, and Bechiras Yosef takes place. Why? Why is Mechilas Yosef? Because that's the way God wants it. And all along in Mitzrayim, Yosef still believed that what Yaakov had told him was going to take place. Listen to the pasuk in Parshat Mikates. The brothers come down, and the Torah says, Vayaker Yosef et Echav, v'hem lo hikiru. Okay? The brother, Yosef recognized his brothers, they didn't recognize him. Who remembers Rashi's comment? How come they didn't recognize him? He recognized them. None of them recognized him. Why? Who remembers Rashi's comment?
They weren't expecting him to be.
No. Who remembers Rashi's comment? Rashi says he will appear. That's why they didn't recognize him. That's what Rashi says. Said the Rav, Vayaker has nothing to do with physical recognition. Vayaker Yosef et Achav. What did the brothers just do when they came down? What did they do? They bowed down to him. So he understood that what was happening, the promise that Father made to me that I'm going to be king is about to be realized. My brothers are bowing down to me. But v'heim lo hikiru. They had no clue as to what was happening. Who did they think they were bowing down to? The viceroy of Egypt. They didn't know it was Yosef. So this whole drama of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, according to Yaakov's perception, the whole thing of the promise to Avram already was taking place. But it didn't take place. Coming back to my point, there is no guarantee to any particular generation that you're going to be with. Indeed, the generation to which it took place in Mitzrayim, that is not Al-Kidin. It was an act of God's mercy and chesed that it took place with that particular generation. It did not have to take place with that generation. The Exodus could have been a third time, a fourth time, a fifth time. We never know. Never know. Therefore, say the Kabbalists, we try to emphasize the fact that it was this Yitzhak Mitzrayim which took place, which actually turned into what? The fulfillment of the promise made to Abraham, that you would be a slave in a land that doesn't belong to you. You'll come out with enormous wealth. That it was this particular generation that indeed was an act of chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it didn't have to be this particular generation. Proof was, Yaakov himself thought it took place 150 years earlier. And had it not happened now, it could have taken place 150 years afterward. So the fact that it did take place with that particular generation at that particular time is indeed not al-pidin, something that God had to do due to the fact that he made the promise to Abraham, because its fulfillment was not necessarily contingent upon any specific generation. It could have taken place in Yaakov's time, it could have taken place way after Mitzrayim time. The fact that it took place at that time was indeed an act of chesed. Hence the Kabbalists believe 4 is the operative number because of Yud Kei Vav Kei. 4 questions, 4 kosos, 4 anis, 4 psukim of Arami Yerubi, and various other 4s, somehow to recognize that indeed this is an act of chesed on his part. Hence, our response is to say thank you for the act of chesed which HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed on our behalf. We'll stop here. Hopefully everybody have a meaningful Pesach.